Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gigax, and I am genuinely excited for the guest that I have today, because as you can see from the title, it is C. Moline. And if you went to the convention in Boston, you know C. Moline, because she got up on the microphone and spoke on behalf of Build a Fighting NALC, spoke on a number of issues, and was so impressive. There are some people who, when they get up to the microphone, you can just tell, like, oh, this person's got it. But where C really made her impression on me is when I went to the Build a Fighting NALC rally, and there were a series of speakers. Of course, the first one was Tyler Vassar, and he was great. You know, you've heard Tyler Vassar on this show. Tyler has his message. Tyler knows what he's talking about. But man, when C got up to talk, she really grabbed hold of that room. So without any further ado, C, welcome to the show.
Oh, wow. Thank you for inviting me here. Wow, what a wonderful introduction.
Yeah, well, now you have to live up to that. So let's get into All right. So I know you from Build a Fighting NALC, but of course there's a lot more to you, but let's get that stuff out of the way first. How did you get started with Build a Fighting NALC?
How did I get started with Build a Fighting NALC? I guess we had met Tyler maybe through Jamie Partridge. Definitely we started talking about this resolution when the resolution came out. That was something
the open bargaining resolution?
Yes. Oh, actually, it would have been before the open bargaining resolution, because it would have been the first contract rally out of Minneapolis. Then we did our own contract rally.
Okay, and so my listeners know you're in Seattle, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm in wonderful, beautiful Seattle, Washington. It's cloudy, gray, and 60 right now.
Oh, dude. As somebody who is still feeling the last effects of brutal summer in Vegas, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is quite nice. I really love it.
Right, I'll bet. Now, I imagine that the gray gets old after a while. But
No, it's the best weather to deliver mail in.
Oh, dude. Yeah, no doubt, because you don't have to worry about the sun beating on you. It's all right, we're going to digress already. Because do you ever carry a walking route, like park and loop?
Yeah, I have a park and loop route.
Okay, so when you're going from house to house, what do you do with the mail? How do you keep the mail from getting just soaked?
You know, it is postal policy that that's not my problem.
Yeah, that's, dude, I have asked that question to many people who deliver in the rain, and they're like, yeah, the mail gets wet.
It's yeah, like wild. In Seattle, yeah. It's all wet. The street's yeah. wet, you're wet, the mail's wet. It's all good.
Right. Yeah, all right, fair enough. Yeah, it's wild that we've been delivering through rain, sleet, snow, gloom of night, and there still has been no good solution for keeping the mail dry. Yep. So
you know, they should have packed it better. That's always my opinion. They needed to be dry. It should have been packed dry.
Yeah, they should use bigger, better, like plastic envelopes or something, mm-hmm. or put wax over them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever tried like the umbrella hat?
I have the helmet, but that's about it.
Okay. Oh, you wear the pith helmet?
I wear the pith helmet, but an umbrella feels like it would get stuck in branches. Like,
yeah, that's almost certainly true. So all of these things are issues that I do not have here in Las Vegas. I get rained on. Like in my 18-year career, I think the number of times I've been involuntarily rained on is like 6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we get most of our rain in the summer, and it's blazing hot. And like, oh, when the rain comes, it is the best. So yeah, it's not really an issue.
If you wanted to avoid the rain, I always suggest you just become a clerk.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so no, turns out my digression is not over yet, because I wear the pith helmet like you do, but I wear it because it keeps the sun off. And the little ventilation that's in it does a pretty good job of keeping my head cool. So let me tell you how dumb I am. I've been wearing that helmet for years. And the big weakness of the pith helmet is, and if you already know where I'm going with this, please don't step on the punchline. The big weakness of the pith helmet is when it's windy, the wind grabs the helmet and pulls it off my head. And I've always noticed on the pith helmet that there is this strap that runs across the front, like this decorative strap. And don't spoil it yet. And so it always struck me as odd. Like, this is such a functional piece of headwear. I wonder why that thing is there. You know, it looks good. And then one day, my hat blew off my head and went rolling down the street. And that little strap came around and was dangling under the helmet. And that's when I finally realized what, see?
That is the helmet strap.
Yeah, that's the chin strap. Yeah, I was wearing that thing for years before I finally realized that.
Well, I'm glad you realized it.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. And, it looks dorky to wear it with the chin strap, but who cares? I'm already married. What's the difference?
I am unmarried, so I wear it without the strap.
Ah, see, there you go. Still a slave to fashion. Indeed. Okay, so getting back on topic here, the Build a Fighting NALC. So you had a rally. There was a rally in Minnesota for the contract, and then there was a rally in Seattle. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think there was maybe even one in Portland. And so we were copying Minneapolis and Portland. And so I think that's about the time I first got in touch with Tyler. And then when the resolution came out, we got in touch there, and then, you know, we passed the resolution too.
Mm-hmm. The open bargaining resolution.
Yeah, the open bargaining and contract campaign resolution.
Right.
And after that happened, they were putting together the coordinating committee, and so it was me and Virgilio Goze. We both got added to the coordinating committee. I think Virgilio met Tyler also at Labor Notes. You know, okay. Virgilio's been really somebody who's really gotten me into the movement. So I really want to credit a lot to him also.
Oh, that's great. So how did you hear about Tyler in the first place and this movement in general?
I think I
was
heard
it
about
from
it,
Virgilio?
Probably from Virgilio. Maybe through Jamie. Jamie Partridge has the Sunday Postal Union Labor Notes meeting. That call is like really good. I felt like I learned a lot, and I think I saw maybe a news article about it, like a write-up.
I don't take part in this call. Tell me about this Labor Notes call. You're not the first person I've heard. John Murphy has also mentioned Labor Notes to me. Mm. Tell me about it.
Yeah, that's where I met John Murphy.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, it's once a week, every Sunday. I think it's at 4:30 Pacific time. It's either 4 or 4:30 Pacific time. And it's run either by Jamie or Al Bradbury. And it's it alternates between national campaign and stuff and workflow issues. On the workflow issues time, sometimes it's just, you know, people coming in and being like, I have this problem, I need help. And people are like, here's what we think you should do. On the national campaign weeks, you know, we just talk about what's going on. You know, people bring up, you know, BFN. Some people bring up We Won't Be Silenced.
We Won't Be Silenced?
That's the Board of Postal Governors. They cut the public comments period for their meetings to like 1 minute per person.
Wow.
So it was a lot. They did a lot of dump to joy stuff early on. So, you know, that's all the like Jamie's long history of postal activism.
Wow.
And I just kind of sit in there. It's a great time. Shout out Vicky Sawicki from, I think, San Francisco.
So is this like a national Zoom call?
Not just the NALC. It's NALC. It's APWU. It's once in a while, you know, we'll get the rural craft in. It's really great because you get to hear from other people. I know Seattle is a little, we represent pretty heavy on there. So it's got, you know, me and Virgilio sometimes are on there. There's some APWU people who are sometimes on there from Seattle. So it's really great because we get to, you know, build our solidarity and, you know, build our actions in like reference to each other. You know?
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. I think Las Vegas is going to have to get represented on there in short order. That is where I am.
I can send you the info. Maybe you can
post please
it.
Do. Yeah, that's a great idea. And is this something that we could talk about, like put the announcement out on Classes of Mail? Like if you want to get involved with this, this is the link you go to or the website or something like that?
Yeah, totally. I'm sure Jamie would love that.
Okay. Well, if
have you
know...
talked with Jamie yet?
No, I have not. So that's going to have to be added to my list of guests. Season 4 of Classes of Mail, which we're in right now, is all about the union itself. And how we're organized, how we hold ourselves accountable, how we're supposed to treat each other, things like that. And yeah, that sounds right up the alley of season 4. Mm. Wow. Okay. So off the top of your head, do you know how would I find, aside from getting an email from you, how would I find labor notes? How would I get involved?
So finding labor notes is a really interesting question. Because labor notes is like a bunch of different things, right? Labor notes kind of helps host that group, but labor notes is like kind of a publication. They have meetups. There's like a lot of different things that labor notes does. I have no official position in labor notes, and I do not represent labor notes in any way.
Fair enough.
They are like. They have their online website where you can read articles that are really good. I think they have a quarterly like publication that comes out like physically that is delivered in the mail. And
yay, post office.
Woo, go us.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, they have a biannual convention in Chicago that is like really blown up recently. I do know there was a postal workers meetup at that, and there was also a federal worker meetup at Labor Notes this past year.
Wow. So, you know, the hosting site that I use for my podcast, RSS.com, recently upgraded their analytics, and now for the first time, I can see what cities Classes of Mail has the most downloads, and it is always Chicago. So, yeah, I guess Chicago is like home to the labor movement.
They are. Well, I just, not to like get really off track.
Oh, go for it.
You know, Labor Day just came up. What was it?
Never heard of it.
Last.
All right.
Well, Labor Day was originally May Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding that the government didn't want us, because May Day is International Working People's Day, right?
Right.
And so they didn't want us to have that solidarity with the rest of the world. So they moved our Labor Day to current day Labor Day. But May 1st was chosen because of, I think, the Haymarket riots, which was the riot for the 8-hour day, and which police like killed a bunch of people.
Man. So,
like, Chicago is kind of, in a lot of ways, like a birthplace of a lot of the labor movement.
Yeah, that's awesome. And isn't that where, I can't remember if it was the Jungle or the Triangle Fire, but I know one of those other big events happened in Chicago as well.
Probably. I think, wasn't the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire?
I think
fire?
That was in
I
New
feel
York.
Like that was New York.
Yeah, yeah. Either way. Yeah, so this is where we are now. And, you know, so one of the things that I really appreciate talking to you about, no, I got to interrupt myself again, because we mentioned the 8-hour day and people fought and died for the 8-hour work day. And that was something that I took away from a conversation with Tyler, is he pointed out, and I know you're aware of this too, that like our union has like given away the 8-hour day. You know, we can be forced to work overtime. And we have no inherent right to this basic part of the labor movement.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly correct.
Yeah, so we have our work cut out for us to get back to being this strong labor leader as a union. Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously you're an organizer. You are an active part of the labor movement. So tell me about your role in the NALC.
So I am currently a steward at my office, which is a 4-zip code office.
Oh my gosh.
I am one of two stewards. I'm kind of the main steward currently. I am a chair of the organizing committee in my branch, and I am I'm running currently for the financial secretary role at my branch.
That's awesome. I am running for vice president at my branch. Vote
let's
in
go.
A, yeah, buddy. Yeah, let's get some fresh blood in there. So what do you do as the chair of the organizing committee? What sorts of things do you organize?
So we've put together two rallies.
To what purpose?
To what purpose? For for it, the contract campaign, open bargaining, okay. And the contract
excellent.
campaign. And we've gone through Secrets of a Successful Organizer. We're currently going through that. Now that we've got our committee through the book, we're now mm-hmm. taking the rest of the branch's stewards through the book. We're also starting kind of a survey process to kind of understand the branch better. We have like 2,000 members, 1,600 active.
Wow.
And so, you know, we also are very far flung. I know this means nothing to you, but we go like from Bill.
Whoop. I seem to have lost you there. All right. I'm going to pause the recording real quick and we will see if we can get. Okay. Whatever that was resolved. See, you were telling me about how far geographically spread out your branch is.
Yes, it goes from an island off of Seattle to Seattle, over a lake, and then through the mountains into Enoch.
Wow.
So yes. It's like a big, physically large branch, and we are not the best at understanding our membership. We have a very diverse branch. You know, English is not everybody's first language in our branch, and I don't feel like we are very good at keeping in contact with our ESL carriers. So we're trying to survey our carriers now. We're working on a process of digitizing those surveys, getting those surveys out, and really trying to understand our branch so we can activate more members, bring members closer and closer into the center of the union, and make sure that our membership is closer and closer to 100%.
That is very important work. So I presume when you have your monthly branch meetings that they're in some central location, like in the heart of Seattle. Is that right?
They're in a central location in the heart of Seattle, but like, I'm not even the most far south, but for me to bus there, it takes like an hour.
Yeah, so that's exactly where I'm going with this, because mm-hmm. for some people, it must be literally impossible to make it to the branch meetings.
It, you know, my opinion is it is never impossible, but it is difficult. We have carriers who have to take ferries. We have carriers who have to drive from, you know, but we have carriers from those places that make it, right?
So that's cool.
Not really a question to me of possibility.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Where there's a will, there's a way. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? What are you doing for outreach to reach these either non-native English speakers or the people who are in further afield areas who maybe can't or don't make it to the meetings? What do you guys do to try to involve everybody or to get everybody educated and on the same page?
I'm going to be honest. We are not at that step yet. We are at surveying, understanding step. And then once we have a better understanding of who we're trying to reach, I feel like we'll be better able to reach these carriers. Right. I think, you know, one of the big things that's like a big dream of mine would be maybe translating a lot of our documents and our pamphlets into more languages. I would specifically choose like, well, I want to do a survey and see what languages people want. But I think Vietnamese is extremely important in this region. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of Vietnamese who, you know, need a little bit more assistance in understanding the contract. And so having it available to read in multiple languages would be really awesome. You know, it's kind of frustrating to me that the contract is only in English, you know, especially considering that so many carriers, English is not their first language.
Right. And it's not an unachievable task to translate it into other languages.
Yeah. Especially if we, you know, we can keep the English version as the like official version. I understand that through translation, the nuances of the contracts don't always get like fully translated, but there can be like an unofficial light version in other languages, you know.
I would agree with that. So one of the platforms that my running mate Michael and I and Jonathan are running on is that we want more hands on deck, like to help with the branch. You can help the NALC in ways that aren't just grievance handling. There are things that you can do for outreach, for communication, for technology. And it sounds like you're hitting along kind of those same things where maybe there are people in your branch who would be able to translate your newsletter or be able to translate the things that you want to send out so that you can bring more carriers into the fold.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this a million times and I'm going to keep saying it, but the idea that like the grievances are one thing we have is really just like we only have one hand now, right? Right. We work in the system, but we have to work outside of the system, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So C and I had a conversation before this podcast episode to just kind of figure out what it is we were going to talk about. And one of the things that we talked about in that previous conversation is that in a lot of ways, when you go from being what's called a solidarity union, where it's just the people who work together get together to petition the boss for a redress of grievances, to solve workplace issues, and solidarity unions have a lot of flexibility in the way they approach problems. Whereas what we have now is what's called a business union. And with the business union, the contract is everything. And in a lot of ways, it ties our hands. And exactly to the point that you're making, essentially all we have is the grievance process.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I want to break this idea a little bit more apart. I don't know if it's really just solidarity unionism versus business unionism. I would say there are more different types, right? I definitely get what you're saying. Business unionism is bad. We can agree on that.
Right.
I think we want like a rank and file union. I think that that's like one of the better ways to think about it, or even just like a class struggle union.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's reasonable. Where the voice of the person on the workroom floor is, the workroom floor has a stronger voice.
Yeah, exactly. Joe Burns wrote a book, Class Struggle Unionism, to just imagine the union as more of a vehicle for change, you know, and instead of kind of this like business union where it's like we're kind of just in stasis. We haven't gotten anything new since we stopped fighting, right? We've only seen our rights pushed back.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. And even with the new contract is allegedly, right. Yeah, everything's hypothetical. Allegedly, there will be a provision where we actually have a right of refusal on going over the 12 and 60 hour limits. So it's
we
a
won
start,
that in
I guess.
Seattle already.
You have we that have like that in your in local Seattle. Agreement or you have that by grievance settlements? How did you win that?
This was actually one of our first campaigns. This is kind of what we argued to get an organizing committee.
Okay.
Really. So I wrote a pamphlet about this, and then...
The pamphlet is the greatest tool of the labor organizer.
Well, you know, talking is the best tool, but second is the pamphlet.
There you go.
But... No, so we made the pamphlet, we, you know, started the grievance process on these 1260s. Eventually in there, we got in the grievance process, we've got the right to refuse, but, it's not written as such right to refuse, but in actuality, it's the right to refuse. It says, you know, you can't be disciplined for clocking on 12, basically.
I mean, that would be the recourse if you refuse, is that you get disciplined. So taking away that discipline, yeah, that gives you that right back.
Yeah.
Man, what an accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, thank Virgilio Gose.
I will. Maybe I'll get a chance to talk to Virgilio at some point as well. Dude, that's fantastic. Okay, So in your mind, what are steps that the NALC can take to make it a more bottom-up union?
Well, I think one, there's like, how do I say this? There's a lot of power in the national that they are not willing at this point to devolve, right? So when you devolve, power from the federal government, you devolve it to like the state government, right? I think that's the right word. And so there's powers at the national that they are not ready to give us. You know, there's transparency. They don't want us to know what they're doing, really. I think that's been clear. They want to do things behind closed doors. They don't want us involved. You know, nobody who has carried mail this year is touching that contract.
It's a great point. Yeah, it doesn't feel like there's that voice from the workroom floor that's heard. So, you know, what's a good example of that is when Brian Renfro will have these teleconferences where he talks like just to presidents. And then the presidents are supposed to disseminate that information. And in theory, there's not a stranglehold on that information. Like the idea is that people are going to talk about what they heard in this meeting. So there's really no reason that message can't be taken directly to the ultimate listener, to the rank and file worker. It's just, there's no will to do so.
Well, you know, I think, yeah, but I would even extend it further, right? It shouldn't just be this, like, one guy comes around and tells us what he did, right? Because there's no accountability in that. How do we know what he's telling us is the truth, right? We've seen that this man is a liar. Why would I start trusting him now, right? So there should always be another person, another 10 people. You know, the idea that even the business agents don't know what he's saying with DeJoy is crazy. You know what I mean?
It's a good point. And in theory, like, that should be the role of the executive board. But looking at it from the outside, it sure doesn't feel that way.
No, but again, there's not a lot of transparency between the membership and the board and the negotiation. There's not a lot of transparency between a lot of these different things. I mean, that would be like a really easy first step towards, sorry.
No, really, I got you. You're back in.
First step towards, towards like making this a more rank and file union. There's a million other things we could get done, but that feels like the biggest impediment to moving forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's an excellent point. It's an excellent insight. And obviously, I agree with that. You know, getting with the people who are actually on the workroom floor, listening to their voices, getting them involved, that is key. And, you know, a place where that allegedly did happen is with the design of the next generation delivery vehicle. You saw that at the convention. I know it's ugly, but when I went inside of it, you know, it was pretty thoughtfully laid out. Like, there's places to put your forms. There's its standing height. It shows that, at least in theory, I mean, we'll see when and if we actually get these vehicles. You know, it remains to be seen. But it's kind of a proof of concept that, like, if you listen to carriers know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that is always, like, whenever they come out with a new rule, a joke that the old timers told me was, like, well, somebody's nephew got paid a couple $1 million to design the scanner. You know, it's...
Right. Oh, dude, you know. The scanners. Yeah. Oh, my God. Dude. Okay, so this is my own ignorance from not having to work in the rain all the time. I have found in my limited experience that the scanner is, like, useless when it gets wet. What do you do to make the touchscreen work? Do you always have to wipe it off? Do you hide it? How do you do that?
I don't think it's like truly useless. I don't know. I don't really have that many problems with it, but maybe okay. It's because I know what I'm doing in the rain.
Yeah, that could be. You've just gotten used to it. When it's always wet, then you just learn how to operate it when it's wet. So maybe it's my own inexperience shining through.
I will say, I want to talk about scanners, not to be
no, a go for cookie, it. Yeah, but, please.
I really think when we. This is something that I keep wanting to write about. I keep wanting to think about. But the scanner is like a spy device, as like a device to be used against us.
Yeah.
I think that that's kind of, it comes out of like this Taylorism, right? This like studying how we work and like developing these things to like make us
for my listeners, define Taylorism.
Taylorism is scientific management. It's when managers study workers and then try to cut out excess motions and excess, like time to make them more efficient. And so when I look at the scanner, I truly just see it as an object of Taylorism. And this is where I kind of have my own feelings about the new improved vehicles, because I am a little bit like, they're going to throw these in our face. I don't know how, but I can feel it. They're going to be like, oh, this one has air conditioning now, so guess what?
We're right, so you don't need extra brakes anymore.
No
right.
extra brakes. Exactly. Like, you can feel it if you're a steward. You can feel like anytime they make an improvement, you're like, oh, they're gonna fuck me over with this.
Yeah, that's
sorry
fair.
Sorry for cursing.
No, dude, that's totally fine. Yeah, that is an absolutely reasonable. You know, as someone who's been in the post office 18 years. I think that you are 100% on the money with that. And then the things that they do that decrease our efficiency, like these places that have gone to sorting and delivery centers, you know, that adds this travel time to people's routes. And from what I've been hearing from people who are at them, the post office has not done a great job of properly accounting for all that additional travel time. And that's
they did it in SNDC and in Everett.
Okay.
They moved some of our carriers up. I think it's like 30 minutes to Everett. Mm-hmm. And they didn't plan this thing out well at all. Apparently, the parking lot is at a significant grade. So, like, all the hampers are just rolling all over the place.
Oh, my God.
Like, there's just huge problems. Like, the only bathrooms are on, like, the second floor, you know, and there was supposed to be a bridge between the parking lot, because the parking lot's on the other side of a highway, and there was supposed to be a walking bridge that just like never got finished. And I heard, it's just a huge disaster, just like we all knew it would be. But of course, DeJoy needs something to put on his resume. So here we are, you know.
Yeah, and at the convention, there was a resolution put forward to fight against SNDCs, and it failed.
You know, I mean, the retirees never have to deal with them. I'll tell you that much.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah. And of course, going to a place like that, you can see the outsized influence that retirees have, because they have the availability of schedule. You know, if they are a paid delegate, they don't have to worry about taking time off of work to go to do something like that. And so they do have this outsized influence on the way our organization runs.
Yeah, I don't like to pit us against the retirees, but it is kind of it is kind of rough to look at the fact that, you know, and that I think is a fact of like retirees are stepping up in places because we are not engaging our rank and file members to actually attend our branch meetings, to get involved in the union, to keep this union going, to get involved in. I don't know. We have a union band here in Seattle.
Like a music band?
Like a music band.
Okay.
But the average age of those band members is rather old, you know?
Right.
So.
Oh.
Different shapes and forms. Sorry.
Right. No, that's all right.
So one of those could be even just, you know, getting people involved with the band again. We used to win parade competitions, and now I don't think many of them could carry their instruments down.
Now, retirees have their place. In a recent labor organizing book that I was reading, there was a chapter about retirees completely losing their voice in the union. And then they wind up getting screwed in new contracts where their pensions are taken away or reduced, things like that. And obviously our retirees have given their entire career to the post office. They've given them themselves for all that time. And so they absolutely deserve a voice. You know, let's not say that, but the voice of the rank and file carrier who is going to bear the brunt of all these decisions needs to be a stronger voice.
Well, every voice should be proportionate, you know, in a
democratization,
it should be proportionate to the amount of, you know, members there are, you know, it shouldn't be. And I think this is a big problem with the national convention, where you could see certain branches were able or willing to pay for all of their delegates. But we both know not every branch paid for all of their delegates to go that could have gone, you know,
that is absolutely true. And going forward at the next convention in Los Angeles, that is part of Michael's and my platform as well, is we want to have that outsized representation and have as big a voice as we can. But it's going to be by, like, we have a budget for sending people to the convention, and the budget is whatever it is. And there's criteria. You have to attend a certain number of meetings. But then you can go as an unpaid delegate, and you just have to be a member in good standing, and you can go to the convention and you can have your voice heard. You got to go on your own dime, but coming from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, that's easy. You know, we could just drive there and then get like an Airbnb, and it's very achievable. And I would love to see more branches do that and try to have, you know, as many workroom floor carriers at the convention as possible.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. So it is. You know, we'll see what happens. I don't know how many people are still going to be willing to take that week off of work and do that. But exactly to your point, it's a goal. Okay. So speaking of the convention, I presume this was your first national convention.
Yes, it was.
Okay. And I know we talked about this before in our pre-interview, but talk about getting onto that microphone for the first time.
Well, I think my first time I was just probably seconding something. I don't know. It's a little bit scary, but I will say I've been to two state conventions.
Okay.
So it's just a bigger state convention. I've been to my Washington State Labor Council convention for the AFL-CIO. So I've had a lot of experience speaking on the mic at a convention. So I'm not like super inexperienced with that.
Right on. So that definitely helps. So one of the things that I noticed as an observer, like I was sitting very close to microphone number 9, which is where Chris Jackson had his speaking from. And I could hear him talking, and then I could hear the bounce back, where like a second later, his voice is coming over the PA. And I got to imagine it's very disconcerting if you're not ready for it.
Yeah, actually, I did most of my stuff towards the front, in between South Carolina and Florida's delegations.
All right. But
I did have something where I ended up in the back and by Chicago. And I remember just being like, oh, this is a nightmare. And so I can understand all of that. But I think the best thing to do is just, if you just have it written down.
Right. Just read it and try to block out what you're hearing. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, or absolutely. Just go to the front. There's no rules that say we couldn't just go to the front.
No, that's true. It's not like you have to go to the microphone that's next to where you're sitting. You can go to any microphone you want. Yep, that is absolutely true. Yeah, at the next convention, I really want to get up and speak on a lot of these issues. There were some that I was passionate about, and that's going to be the plan going in, is to do a lot of preparation. Like I know you guys did with the BFN, where you have speeches and topics ready to go so that when it's time, you can get up and give the best presentation possible. Mm-hmm. And Tyler, his last speech, you know, where the big speech about open bargaining, God, he did such a fantastic job.
Yeah, he's a great speaker.
He really is. Yep. And clearly believes in the things that he's saying and believes in the labor movement. Yep. And as do you. So where
shouldn't
do
we
you,
all? We're in a union. That's
you're damn
so
right
crazy.
We should. Yeah, that is the whole point. Absolutely. Yep. So what is your future? What are you working toward in the NALC and in the labor movement in general?
So in the NALC, one of the big things we got, so I'm working on continuing to be a steward for my carriers at my station. I signed, like, in my estimate, $90,000 worth of ODL bypasses today. We'll see how much that actually comes out to, but that's my estimate on that. I'm working really hard at that. I want to become the financial secretary for my branch so I can better look at our membership numbers and really make sure that we're reaching all of our members. In the organizing committee, I want to continue to be teaching secrets of a successful organizer. I want to be continuing to bring in, oh, that's another thing I didn't say, I guess. We had a class with Labor Education Resource Center of Washington, and we had them come in and teach us a little bit about data. And so I want to continue working that and, you know, continuing our education on organizing. I want to focus on our membership surveys. That's going to be going out soon. That's our current project.
To make your branch more inclusive. Yeah.
Not just more inclusive, but like that's like one aspect of it. But like a lot of it is just like, what are we not doing? Like that's one of the questions is like, what do you want our union to do that you feel like it currently isn't doing?
It's a question that people in leadership should always be asking themselves.
And we haven't been asking it recently. Right. So it's something that I want to ask. And then, we'll be going up. I just talked to my president. We're going to be going to Bellingham. Bellingham is having an October 14th rally. So we had decided, we had already done two rallies. We spent a lot of money putting them together. So we were like, we will sit this one out, but we will go and support Bellingham's, which is one of our nearby sister branches.
Okay.
They came and supported us during our last rally. So we wanted to go and support them. And then that's what I want to do inside our branch. In the labor movement as a whole, I'm on the e-board for my local Central Labor Council, and I am the chair of an organization called Young Emerging Labor Leaders Washington.
YEL, that's such a good acronym.
It is a great acronym. Yeah. We say when we yell, we win, which is kind of silly. But so I'm working on building up that organization again. I'm currently the chair, so, you know, it's talking to our members to get them involved in the organization, kind of trying to reach out to other unions. We have walked the picket lines now with Unite Here and the IAM Boeing workers who are on strike.
Yeah.
And we are trying to put together some education events. And then I'm going to be teaching a class on resolutions to the Labor Education Resource Center. I'll be doing that in December. So I'm working towards that. That's actually a paid gig, which I'm kind of like,
nice,
a little proud of. I was invited to teach that class. But yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do. I've got a lot going on. I kind of got nothing else going on, if I'm honest.
You know, yeah, this is obviously a big mission for you. It's important to you. And I got to tell you, I'm so thankful that you've come onto this podcast, that you talk to my listeners, because the message of solidarity, the message of our role in the labor movement really needs to be heard. It really needs to be felt. And I'm so impressed with what you're doing up in Seattle. I was impressed with what I saw from you right from word go at the national convention. And man, what a bright future our union has if we embrace more people like you, people who want that solidarity, who want that leadership, who want the voice of our workers to be heard. See, thank you so much for coming on to Classes of Mail.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me on it.
All right. And thank you guys for listening, and we will catch you all next time.